Release International has come up with a forecast, let's say, for 2014 in terms of the situation of persecution of Christians will be looking like for this year. Could you give us a sort of a rundown?
There are two key elements to the way we see things going in 2014, and I have to say that in many ways we hope it doesn't go like this. So it's not so much a forecast as a way of looking ahead at current trends and seeing what is likely. And there are two areas particularly which are real challenges for the church around the world in 2014. One of them is very obvious, and that's the continuing rise of Islamist persecution. Those are attacks by militants who are seeking to change governments within their countries, who are seeking to come to power. We've got two elections coming up. One is in Afghanistan. Afghanistan's obviously a turbulent place. NATO troops are due to pull out of there by the end of 2014, and there are elections in Afghanistan coming up. So the prediction there that many people are making is that there'll be a rise in Islamist attacks by the Taliban in Afghanistan. Another area also connected with elections is Nigeria. There are 2 years of elections coming up in Nigeria, and the terrorist group Boko Haram have been extremely active. Release International's contacts in Nigeria are concerned that what Boko Haram will do over these next couple of years is an extension of what they've been doing already, which is creating chaos or attempting to create chaos in the country to establish their own power base. So we know that there have been very recent attacks by Boko Haram in the north of Nigeria, but and the leader of Boko Haram has declared a war on the president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan, and also on Christians. So in their own thinking, there is an element of that jihad for them is a holy war. So that's the very obvious thing. You'd expect an organization like Release and others like us to say that Islamist violence is continuing. But another area that we spotted a real concern, and it's one that's continued for many years now, is in the communist and post-communist world. So North Korea has headed many people's lists of the worst persecutor of Christians around the world for quite some time now. It's a place which is absolutely brutal in its refusal to allow anything other than its own form of emperor worship in the nation. So if people are worshipping God or they're worshipping Christ or any other god, then there is a brutal clampdown on them there. But we also see, in terms of communism is clearly not dead, it may have changed. China is still an oppressor of Christians. Vietnam, Laos also. But where you see both of these two trends coming together, interestingly enough, is in Central Asia, because you've got a culture there, a background culture, former Soviet Union, of background communism, so authoritarian and repressive. You also have Muslim-majority countries. Now, most of those will consider themselves constitutionally to be secular, but where you've got nations with a strong Islamic culture and a strong communist culture, there you have really quite a great deal of repression. And that we see happening in Central Asia.
You mentioned earlier there Afghanistan. Of course, there are very, very few Christians in that country. So how do you actually come up with your statistics for that country regarding Christian persecution?
We haven't offered any statistics, but what we are saying and what has been happening in Afghanistan is that under the Taliban, anyone who had converted to Christianity from Islam faced execution by the state or being murdered by their relatives. And there are Christians who are active within Afghanistan, and there are Muslims who are wanting to change their faith in that nation. The numbers may be small, but the repression against them is absolutely severe, and the authorities even today are turning a blind eye to persecution in that country. So according to our partner who is working within that area, if the Taliban begins to take more control of Afghanistan, it's likely that there will be more persecution of Christians. You're absolutely right in saying that there is a tiny minority of Christians in that nation. But what we see in Afghanistan, the Talibanization of Afghanistan that took place in the past, is a reflection, and which may well increase again with the withdrawal of NATO troops, is a reflection of what is happening in other countries where there is a hardening of religious fundamentalism against Christianity and against anybody that would wish to change their faith.
In October last year, Muslim judges on a Malaysian appeals court ruled that Christians may no longer use the word Allah to refer to God, even though they've been using it for centuries. Do you see that extending to other parts of the world? And how serious is the problem?
Interesting question about whether that particular ruling might extend anywhere else. From the point of view of an audience that is not necessarily Muslim or Islamic or has that culture, these things can be very difficult to understand. And Sharia has many, many shades within it. So when you look at something like the most extreme versions of Sharia that are being proposed by groups that we would call terrorist groups, such as Boko Haram in Nigeria, for example, or the Taliban in Afghanistan, what you have is a return to an absolutist mentality that says, I've tried to understand this myself by saying it's a little bit like this. Just imagine that Christ had never come, and that the faith that Christians have today was actually a form of Judaism. If you can kind of imagine that there was no grace at work, and that what we had was law, and the responsibility of God-fearing religious people would be to impose the law of God and to make sure that the those of the faith were true in the faith, then you would get a culture of the culture that St. Paul came out of, which was one of severely repressing heretics and people who proposed a different kind of faith. In that case, it was Christians, of course. We would get the stoning of Stephen, which we saw in all of that. We would get an absolute refusal to allow people to attempt to convert other people. And inevitably, along with that, we would get an internal clampdown on those of the faith, refusing to allow them to change their faith. It's that kind of mentality which will have Muslims who attempt to change their faith executed for apostasy. Anybody that dares to create anything that looks like a blasphemy against Islam, killed for doing so, either by vigilantes or by the state. And actually in Pakistan, we know that the Sharia court there is actually saying, look, the law says there must be the death penalty for blasphemy. It isn't enough just to lock people up forever. We must have a return to the death penalty. It's that kind of movement that we see taking place in places like Indonesia and elsewhere. It's a drift towards a most extreme and fundamentalist version of Islam. So when we go back again to probably the most extreme version of it we can see at the moment, which is Boko Haram, the leader of Boko Haram is currently saying that if Allah commands that we hack off people's hands and feet and execute people, then we will do it. So it's a kind of ultra-purist version, extremist, no compromise, no shades of grey version that is being put forward, which is actually infecting Islam around the world.
Can I just ask, how does Release International collect all of this information in the various countries around the world?
Release works with partners on the ground in those nations. Release is It's an agency which serves the persecuted church. So we have two parts to what we do. One is that we provide information, we educate, and we inform. But actually, more importantly than that, what we do is we support persecuted Christians. So we will work with families of pastors who've been imprisoned. We will help rebuild houses that have been torn down by extremists and terrorists. But we do so by working with partners. So those are trusted partners who are often nationals to the countries that they're involved in, not always, but very nearly always, and who are working there, who are dedicated to work there. So our current global overview that we're talking about today has come from interviewing our partners to say, what is the situation like? How do you see the situation going? And we're basing what we say on what they say, because they're on the ground and they know it. They're dealing with it all the time.
With your partners there on the ground, what does Release International actually propose to see an end to this spiral of violence?
Well, what can Release International or anybody else do about it? Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. So we know that there will always be persecution, but that doesn't mean that we stay silent about it. I think that there are two scriptural approaches to it, both of which are valid and need to be held in tension. There's Hebrews 13:3, which says, remember those in prison, those who are suffering, as if you yourself were suffering. So there's a need to identify with our brothers and sisters. They're not foreigners out there somewhere. They are you and me if we lived in those countries. This is what we would be going through. So we need to identify with them, stand with them, bear their burdens, pray for them, and practically support them. The other element of it, Proverbs 31:8 says, speak up for those who have no voice. Speak up for the poor and needy. Defend them. So there's a need for advocacy. There is a need to say, this is wrong. Governments need to be taking action to do something about this. Laws are unjust. They need to be changed. So it's a two-pronged approach to speaking up for those, on behalf of those who are oppressed, standing up for the truth and right standards in government and in justice, and pressing governments that are in a position to do something about it to do so. So Release and other organizations like us will typically take those two approaches of practical, pastoral care and support and help, and also raising awareness, raising an understanding of what's going on, calling for change.